It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
For the right advice at the right time, let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio once again. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to talk about, well, this, we will probably also talk about this next week, which is spousal rights, the right of a spouse once there is a legal marriage in the state of North Carolina, and what the effect of that is on different legal aspects of these folks' lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mostly this arises in the second and, you know, second marriages, third marriages with children from prior marriages, and just generally speaking in the second marriages. As we get into the facts and into the weeds of this, we will, I think our listeners will begin to understand what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, so many rights, obligations, arise as a result of a marriage in the state of North Carolina.
Right.
The law has generally always kind of protected, if you will, the sanctity of marriage and the importance of the surviving spouse, if you will. And we begin right out of the gate with the fact that the surviving spouse in an estate has, first of all, the preference to qualify as the administrator of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they have the right to a spousal allowance.
Okay.
They also have the right to an elective share.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now, all of these, those three, you know, advantages, if you will, of being a spouse arise by operation of law. I mean, if you're married and if you can show that you're married at the time that your spouse dies, you have the preference to be the administrator of their estate. You are entitled to the year's support or the spousal allowance. You are entitled to an elective share of their estate, notwithstanding what the will might say.
Right, right.
Okay.
But now, but some of the things are in balance with other things. When you say qualify as the administrator,
yes,
that would be if the person dies intestate. Is that correct?
That would be. That would be. There would have to be, if there were a will appointing someone other than the spouse, then the will would trump that, that law.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
But here you mentioned things that are trumped by the will and things that are not.
Right. Yeah, for instance, the elective share provisions are not trumped by the will.
Mm-hmm.
And the year's allowance is also available to a spouse, notwithstanding the will. Now, if the part, you know, when the parties are in, you know, the, if you will, the traditional marriage, you know, you know, mom and dad and two children and have been married 30, 40 years, you know, these issues, let's just face it, are not usually a problem.
Right.
I mean, that's what those, you know, that loving, wonderful married couple expects to happen. They expect for their spouse to be their executor, for their spouse to inherit their estate. They have collective children. You know, this is, you know, what do we call this? The Aussie inherited marriage.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, fewer
this
and
is,
fewer
this
of those.
Is not what generally speaking where the problem is. Mm-hmm. Okay. The problem arises in the fact where we have, you know, a spouse who is entering into a second marriage. Maybe they've lost their first spouse.
Right.
You know, a geriatric, if you will, an older person who, you know, loses their wife to cancer, something of that nature. And now here they are, a single man in their 70s. Okay.
Right.
They seek then, of course, companionship.
Mm-hmm.
And now they, for some reason, decide that it's best to get married or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we have a spouse who is entering into a second or third marriage, if you will, with children from a prior marriage.
Right.
And this is where these issues become sticky, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, let me go ahead and say that if the parties enter into a prenuptial agreement, as to many of these issues that we've talked about thus far, the estate issues mostly, those issues can be waived or addressed in a prenuptial agreement.
Yeah.
And Wes and I are able to do some real magic for these people if we're given the opportunity to do a prenuptial agreement. And our listeners need to understand the importance of this prenuptial agreement because it gets dramatized, if you will, by the sitcoms on TV and lots of movies and things of that nature.
Sure, sure.
Okay?
Just like wills do.
Just
well,
like wills and estates, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But given the opportunity to address these issues in a prenuptial, a contract, basically, mm-hmm. between the parties, this is nothing more than that. That is, even though I'm using the big word prenuptial, prenuptial is a contract. It's an agreement between these two folks, this wonderful gentleman who lost his wife to cancer, who's in his 70s, that's now in a relationship with another woman who maybe lost her husband also to a disease. They now have companionship. They want to get married. They each have children from prior marriages. Mm-hmm. They then sit down and they just agree. Look, we're going to live our life together. We're going to maybe have a joint account to manage our household expenses. Mm-hmm. But as to my assets that I have in my marriage, I'd like for those to go to my children. And I want my oldest son to be the executor of my estate.
Right.
And I the wife and the woman of this relationship want my assets to go to my children. Mm-hmm. I'll let my oldest daughter be in charge of my estate. And they agree to this.
Well, Cecil, that's so very civil.
Yeah, well, it is.
It's just a matter of doing it.
And
it's just a matter
of
doing it.
That's right. Them that are in exactly like that,
yeah.
Extremely civil.
Yes.
We do a lot of this work.
Good.
And it is very civil, and it works. And so that's a good thing.
But
all right?
Then you're called in to put on your fireman's hat and come in to put out a fire of one that's not so civil. Right?
Now, I don't mean to be doing all the talking this morning, but I just want to kind of compare and contrast because it's always a great way to talk about things. Now, let's contrast for just a minute, and I'm going to let Wes take it over, but I'll lay the predicate. Let's contrast the nursing home expenses.
Right.
Let's get married in our 70s, mm-hmm. okay? Let's even go to Harvell and Collins and get a prenup. But now all of a sudden, our spouse, our second spouse, if you will, mm-hmm. with children from a prior marriage, has to go into a nursing home. Let's talk about that a minute, Wes, because that's where the prenup is different.
Exactly. With regard to the prenup and long-term care expenses, the prenup really does nothing for us whatsoever. If we're talking about someone who may be eligible for Medicaid.
Right.
Okay. And as we've talked about on the program before, you know, there's a lot that can be done to protect a lot of assets. That's mm-hmm. a topic for another program with regard to protecting assets. If we have, for example, a marital home among these folks, mm-hmm. we can protect that to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. There are some caveats to that. There's
sure.
some landmines that people need to be careful about that we can talk about on a different program and some planning that can be done to avoid those. But the big picture here is that in the event that either one of the two parties, in this second or third marriage, whether they have a prenup or don't have a prenup, if one of them has to go into long-term care, Alzheimer's, dementia, someone has a stroke, any of these type things, then if we're talking about who is going to pay that $6,000, $7,000 a month, which is what it costs, you know, in this state, which, by the way, is a lot cheaper than some other states, but it's still incredibly expensive, then we have to count all of the assets of the husband and all of the assets of the wife.
Right.
Everything. And there is no way to address that with a prenup. So for those listening out there or those who have family members, in this type scenario, considering the second marriage later on in life, the third marriage later on in life, that would be a deterrent. There are more folks living in their, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s who have lost their spouse or no longer with their spouse anymore, maybe have the girlfriend or the boyfriend.
It's a marriage penalty.
But just exactly. They decide not to get remarried, and that's a big motivating factor.
We're going to talk more about that coming up in just a moment. And your questions are welcome if you'd like to call in. Here are the numbers.
800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
And we'll have more to come on Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, in just a moment. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us, answering your legal questions at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Mentioned a little bit about elective share, and that has a role here.
Yeah, no question. We're talking about, you know, the legal ramifications of marriages later on in life.
Mm-hmm. And estates, really.
And estates. We just talked a little bit on one of the subtopics here regarding, you know, long-term care expenses. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about this marriage later on in life, we're mm-hmm. talking about the right of the surviving spouse to make an elective share against the estate of the surviving spouse to make mm-hmm. a claim against the deceased spouse estate.
Right.
Through the elective share. And we're also talking about the spousal allowance. So, you know, that's an interesting dynamic, because if you don't address that with a prenuptial agreement, then that's an automatic right. And usually what we're talking about there is that, you know, spouse number one, the husband, for example, usually wants all his assets upon his death to probably eventually trickle down to his children.
Right.
You know, and then the wife then wants her assets to trickle down to her children. But in the event, let's say that the husband passes away first, well, mm-hmm. then the surviving spouse, the wife, can then make that elective share claim, which, depending on how long they've been married, could be up to 50% of his entire estate. That means probate estate and
right.
non-probate estate.
Right.
It means life insurance, trust, everything. Okay. And then that's really altered the plan then,
mm-hmm.
because then we're in a situation where 50%, depending on how long they've been married, 50% then goes to that surviving spouse and then trickles down to that spouse's
yeah.
kids.
Right.
Now, what we hear oftentimes is that, oh, we have an agreement that they won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that that's out there, but we know that they're not going to do that. Well, where we see that come into play sometimes is where the surviving spouse maybe has some kind of cognitive issue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe then isn't in control of these issues anymore. It can't address their or deal with or make decisions with regard to their financial decision making. And then one of the children maybe becomes the power of attorney or becomes the guardian.
And decides to take that
and
elective
then decides, share. Well, I didn't know anything about this. I didn't know that there was any kind of agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the right to take that elective share. And they certainly have a financial incentive to do so.
Mm. And they potentially have the legal obligation to do so.
Mm-hmm.
We have a
That's
file.
Exactly right. Yeah.
We have a file in our office right now where the elder lady is represented through her power of attorney by a very reputable and good lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He is her attorney, in fact.
Right.
Okay.
Appointed by the court.
Yes.
Which
right.
years ago,
uh-huh.
when everyone was healthy and everything was fine, who could have ever imagined that mm-hmm. this attorney, 20 years later,
right.
would be appointed to be in control of the decision making for this elderly lady?
Right.
You never would see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, Cecil's saying that he now has to make the elective
share. He does. So then the husband dies. And of course, the husband left his estate to his children from
mm-hmm.
a prior marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Her will, of course, leaves her estate to her children.
Right.
From a prior marriage.
Right.
Okay. They both have considerable assets. Mm-hmm. They were married for a long time.
And the children on each side don't get along either.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's a perfect storm.
Not unusual.
Right.
Right.
So we're representing the estate of the husband.
Mm-hmm.
And were intending to distribute his assets to his children.
Right. Okay.
But she, through her power of attorney, is represented and is represented, you know, to the best of his capacities as her attorney, in fact. And of course, this
and
lawyer.
And he has a duty.
And he has a duty. Yeah. And he followed through on that duty.
That's right.
Under her power of attorney to file for the elective share. And so now one half of his assets are passing to her, even though she is incompetent, and will at that point pass according to her will to her children.
Yeah. So really counter to all the intents out there, but this is the law.
That's right. And it makes no difference what agreements they had before.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they decided, you know, we were going to deal with this. I'm never going to do this. I know there's elective share. Things that the wheels of the law have turned have gone so far in this situation with this family that it is completely out of control. And now the statutes control it. Now, if a prenup had been done or even a postnup, I mean, if the agreement between husband and wife is, we really want everything to be separate. We love each other, but we want it to be separate and then pass on to our kids because that's our intent. And that was my spouse's intent, who's now deceased. Then fine. Go see a good lawyer, do a postnuptial agreement and address these issues if you're already married.
Does that override the elective share though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So it would. So, but in, but as you said though, this was hardly foreseen. So,
exactly.
This becomes one of the things you talked about, the sanctity of marriage. Well, sometimes I wonder, you know, how much that is upheld, and do we is there a time when it's advice is to not get married?
Most of these issues, though, Ben, just so we say, you know, we can plan around these contingencies given the opportunity to do so.
All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. If you'd like to be in touch with Harvell and Collins, you go online at harvellandcollins.com or give them a call at 726-9050. Hey, welcome back here on a Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about rights of spouses and how that works in an estate.
Right.
I think, Ben, to give it some semblance of summary today, because I think that it's difficult for our listeners to follow all of this. In the estate context, this elective share, what our children get from our prior marriages, controlling our estates. These are things that good lawyers are, these are the facts that good lawyers are able to mold, for a favorable result for those clients. We have solutions for those potential problems. One of the ones that we, that one of the most difficult files that comes across our desk is the other issue relative to long-term care. That is a challenging file because Medicaid simply will not allow us to plan around the fact that the assets of the spouse are not part of the qualification process. And it doesn't matter whether it's the spouse of 50 years or the spouse of 5 years. Okay. This is a very challenging file.
Let me make a comment about that. See, I mean, the way that happens often is that the children who are maybe the power of attorney, the attorney, in fact, come to us to help for us to help them plan with regard to maybe Medicaid eligibility for their father, for example. So we represent that side of the family. We don't represent the spouse in this second marriage.
Right.
So we can't really do much with regard to the spouse's assets. We can plan to protect the husband's assets. We have those tools in our toolbox to do that. We know how to do that. We do it very frequently. But that doesn't get him to the point where he's eligible because the spouse's assets are still over there.
Still count.
And there we are in control of half of the file. And then when you start talking about, you know, protecting her assets and doing these type things, well, it gets complicated, put it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, usually the attorney likes to be in control of everything so we can not leave some stone unturned, you know. So I think right. that's what you were leading up to there.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, as we go to closure today, Ben, here on the radio program, I just wanted to compare and contrast those two. Mm-hmm. The estate-related issues, elective share, year support, right to qualify as administrator, executor, inheritance rights. These are things that, given the opportunity, we are able to plan around.
Mm-hmm.
But as to long-term care and Medicaid qualification, that's a challenge. Those are challenging files in our office when there's a second marriage
right.
with assets wanting to be protected on both sides, because Medicaid is going to look at both sides, both the assets of husband and the assets of wife. And we can talk about a prenup all day long. We can talk about, well, but these assets go to those children, and these assets over here go to a second set of children. Medicaid doesn't want to listen to those arguments.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that file presents some challenges at our office. Now, we still work around it, and we do the best we can. It helps, as Wes is mentioning, the other side of what he was saying is that when there is cooperation mm-hmm. by both sides of the equation, sometimes we are able to, again, get some a positive result for the client. But it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. I think we have like maybe a minute. A couple other things. Of course, when husband and wife buy property together.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
It becomes tenants by entirety.
Mm-hmm.
When one dies, it automatically goes to the other. Most people know about equitable distribution, assets that are derived through the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
In the event of a divorce, then we have to account for what is separate property, what's marital property, and the presumption is that the marital property is split 50-50. So we get into those kind of issues, and those are common for really any marriage, not so mm-hmm. much particular to the second, third marriages we're talking about. But another flip side of this, maybe we can talk about this next week, is that we deal with issues also where there is the girlfriend, boyfriend in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and they never get married.
Right.
And the intent is to take care of the spouse, and it's usually this way. It's usually if the husband dies, I want to take care of my girlfriend who's really yeah. been like my wife, mm-hmm. but we never got married.
Mm-hmm.
We have, that happens a lot. And then there's a failure to plan. And then here we are with significant others that have been together, maybe living like husband and wife for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Husband passes away. Significant other spouse is left there in her 70s, 80s with nothing.
Right.
So yeah. that failure to plan can be devastating, you know, to in that situation. If there's not marriage. Now, if they did get married, then there's the right to the elective share.
Right.
Then there's a right to the spousal allowance, all the things that the law protects. So you kind of see how that works on both sides.
Again, find out more by contacting Harvell and Collins at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, online at harvellandcollins.com.